The moment we're living through presents a few mental health challenges. There's fear because of the pandemic, general anxiety, and then also new paradigms to deal with. From working at home, to maybe being isolated from your community if you live alone, or maybe being kind of cooped up in close quarters with the rest of your household if you don't. So we're reserving the next hour for exploring mental health for Utahns handling the coronavirus. I'm Tim Pierce, and I'll be your guide through three conversations our reporting staff had with mental health experts. For some strategies on how we can all deal with the kind of scary moment we're living through, KCPW producer Roger McDonough spoke with Danaya Marie Allerton from the University Neuropsychiatric Institute at the University of Utah.
Danaya Marie Allerton, SAFE UT Supervisor with University Neuropsychiatric Institute. Thanks very much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
So the reason that I wanted to speak with you today is because we are living through a crisis, a global pandemic, and we've had to drastically change our behaviors in the name of public health. As a result of both the pandemic and measures that are necessary to deal with the pandemic, I think many people are feeling anxious or scared or isolated. And today on the show, we're focusing on how we process that from a mental health perspective. And I wonder if that's maybe not where we should start with what the sort of common or natural responses are to this strange moment in time that we're living through. I just mentioned anxiety, and I imagine that that's kind of at the top of the list. But what else are we likely to be experiencing in this moment beyond anxiety? What's kind of the list of things that we probably are all feeling?
Yeah, no, excellent question. And I want to quickly explain anxiety and differentiate anxiety that people have clinically, you know, that is an anxiety diagnosis versus the anxiety we feel every day about life, and certainly the anxiety we're going to feel during these times. And so, you know, for those folks that do have clinical anxiety, I imagine that they're really struggling right now, as well as those folks who may not have anxiety as much in their regular lives. And then something like this comes on, it's going to really bump up those feelings of anxiousness. And anxiety is a fear of the unknown future. It's the what ifs. And so it's very, very understandable and very normal that we're all going through the what ifs during this time, especially for those of us in Utah with the recent earthquake and the ensuing aftershocks. There's not only going to be anxiety, there's going to be feelings of panic, feelings of insecurity emotionally and physically. A lot of people have talked to me about just being very afraid of any noise, any loud, you know, bumps or movement that they felt after the earthquake. And we certainly saw a spike in calls at the crisis center that day, right after the earthquake. So we're all going through the same thing. And to me, that brings some sense of comfort. And I think we really need to connect and remember that instead of staying in our heads, let's talk about the fears we're all having.
I wonder about the sort of potential for people. So, I mean, there's compounding, as you said, these compounding sort of scary things from the coronavirus to the fact that we had an earthquake. There's concerns about, you know, the economic future and so on and so forth. And I wonder also about the potential for people to panic and what that does to the kinds of decisions that they might make. I mean, if you're feeling helpless or like things are not within your control, you might not make the best decisions for yourself. Is that an accurate statement, Danya?
Certainly. When we are in a fight or flight mode, which many of us have experienced throughout the virus scare, the economic implications, the earthquake, we're going to get into that panic mindset, like you said. And if you can think about any time that, you know, you felt panic in your life, you don't make the best decisions. You the body is built in those moments of the fight or flight. We also know there's a freeze response, and there's even a tend and befriend response, which if we have time, we can talk about that. But fight, flight, or freeze are kind of the main three that we think of. Our bodies were designed to make the survival decisions in that moment, not decisions that are going to have long-term effects, like, you know, what to do with our stocks, what to do with, should I go out and buy a bunch of stuff or should I not, or that sort of thing. So it's hardwired in us to, you know, when the panic comes on, those moments are for us to be able to make a life or death decision. And we have to remember and try to prepare ourselves for, you know, is this really a life or death situation, or is this my fear and reaction causing my body to jump into that state when it's not quite at that point yet?
It's interesting also the kind of sense of, I mean, what you're talking about is the fact that we have built-in mechanisms, but our built-in mechanisms are not apt or adept to moments of panic or crisis that aren't, you know, immediate threats of danger or whatever they are, you know, be it a tiger in the woods or something. But there's also this sort of like fear as a contagion, right? Like people seeing others in their community react in a certain way and then that spreads. Is that, you know, is part of it recognizing that it's a somewhat, I don't want to say irrational, but a somewhat overblown response from time to time? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, and it's hard to answer if it's overblown, because I don't know what's going to happen in the next, you know, day or 30 days. What I would say is that panic spreads, just like you said. And it's certainly anyone's choice to live in that panic mode or not. But I would advocate for recognizing that it's not helpful, right? We hear a lot of the extreme stories on the news of things happening because of that panic mindset in our communities. And I would advocate for a preparation mindset over panic mindset. I was talking with a psychiatrist from uni earlier today, and they're advocating in their department and with their folks that they see, the preparation of, okay, who do I want to be during these times? Who do I want to remember myself as? What do I want to be remembered for? And how can I prepare little by little, just every day, rather than complete and utter panic that, you know, usually comes from not being prepared mentally, emotionally, physically, because we're seeing the effects of that panic mindset. It's just, you know, we're talking about virus spread, but that panic is sure spreading as fast as the virus.
Can we move on to the coping strategies? And, you know, it seems like for, you know, both for an individual or, you know, maybe a family, we're coping with an array of mental health risks. You have, as you said, not the clinical, but the general anxiety that stems from potentially getting sick that's out there. There are other issues as well, an increase in isolation, feeling lonely. Is there some sort of overarching advice for all of this, Danya?
Well, yes. There's a few things that I think can help. And there are a lot of helpful resources on the CDC website, on WHO's website. And, you know, if you check in with your individual employers, they may have a work wellness that aligns with some of these things that I'm going to say. But one thing is to, I like the idea of social connection during the social distancing. So we're not wanting to socially isolate. So still, you know, we're so fortunate to have technology where we can connect. Take time every day to talk with people, to not only just talk, I would even say avoid talking about the news if you can, and just talk about some self-care that you're doing and catch up on some of those relationships that might have been forgotten or neglected. Another thing I would say is get out in nature, you know. Get out and get some fresh air, go on some hikes, just really get your body healthy and moving, because that stability that exercise brings is going to be a solid foundation for the preparation mindset that I talked about earlier. And I would say a big thing that's hard to do during these times, but that's helpful, is to be a support to others. You know, obviously we want to take care of ourselves in these times, and please do. And remember that on any given day, your panic could be lower than somebody else's that needs your support. And so if you can think of ways to support your your circle of influence, your community, I would really encourage that.
It's interesting because, I mean, you're maintaining relationships to avoid feeling isolated, but just by reaching out, you're doing, you know, both yourself a service and the person that you are connecting with a kind of service too. If you're thinking about, you know, taking that step of making that phone call or whatever the thing is to connect with your community.
Right. No, exactly.
You know, you mentioned exercise. A lot of people don't have an exercise routine. You talked about getting out, doing a hike. You know, many people do have an exercise routine. Others don't. You know, we know it's good for us, but that doesn't mean that we're doing it all that often. For those of us who are homebound at this moment, who are necessarily forced to stay home, except for, you know, in those instances when they can go out and take a walk, how important is exercise? Is that, I mean, it's always important, but is it more important now? I don't know if you can put a value on that, Dania.
Well, I would say it's very, very important for mental health, for physical health, emotional health. And it's interesting. There's so many at-home quarantine workouts that have popped up on social media. So, you know, for those of you who are at home, check it out. See if there's anything that suits your interest. And I think even just moving around the house throughout the day, going upstairs or, you know, washing dishes by hand rather than putting them in the dish washing machine, just simple things like that to just keep yourself and your body moving is really important.
How about routine? I've read a lot of things that kind of pop up in, you know, yeah, again, in my social network feeds that say an important thing to do right now is to get into a routine, especially for people who are working from home for the first time and maybe don't know where to start. Is that a way of maintaining some semblance of control?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The routine during this time after the earthquake we've had really helps when there's been an acute trauma that we've, you know, we've all experienced some degree of trauma, I think, throughout this. So getting yourself into routine, there are so many great articles out there online that talk about how to do that while you're working from home. And so I'd recommend browsing some of those and avoiding, you know, some of the scary stuff online, of course, but just the routine, like you said, is so important. Even if you're working at home, get out of your pajamas and put some work clothes on and work at the table for a few hours. That really changes things.
How about, you know, you mentioned this, there's this deluge of news connected to the pandemic, and I'm in the business of keeping people informed. That's what I do. But there comes a point where the sort of constancy of the updates, the case counts and so on, it can be overwhelming. What you just said is to try and disconnect from that. Do you want to just talk about that a little bit more?
Sure. This is the advice I would give anyone just wanting to stay mentally healthy is there's been some research done in Utah, particularly with young kids, about high amounts of screen time correlating with suicidal thoughts and feelings of isolation. And I think we can learn a lot from that just in general to learn how to disconnect from the sort of the visual constancy of sorting and flipping and scrolling through our phones to give our brains a break from that screen light and to do something else. And at the same time, now that we're going through a really strange time for most of us, we haven't been through something like this before, technology is a great way to stay connected to people. So I would recommend, you know, it's great to be informed. It's great to be updated. And be very thoughtful about what you're looking at and how long you're looking at it for, and notice how you feel after you read the different articles about the virus. Is it helping you stay informed and you feel empowered, or is it getting you to worry and panic? If you're getting in the worry and panic mode, that is triggering something to say, you know, this is probably too much time that I'm spending and I need to do something else.
Or conceivably, this information is designed to make me feel scared because there's something, I don't know, sensational. I don't want to get into that conversation. But yes, I that seems like very good advice. I want to turn to, you know, if you're a family and you're at home, you're all there together. There's a kind of forced proximity going on that isn't always the natural state of things in a household. How do you ensure that that constant proximity doesn't become a problem for you and the relationships you have at home?
What I said before applies. Being able to, you know, if you're an introvert, take time to separate from people, get your recharge time in. If you're an extrovert, then, you know, making sure that you've got adequate time with folks. And there's probably a mix of both in households. So having communications, check-ins every day of what do you need today? Do you need some alone time? Do you need to be with somebody? You know, what do you need? And maybe even creating a schedule like you would do in a workplace or a school where it's, okay, during these times, this group is going to be in the living room working on homework. And then at 12 o'clock, this is going to become the entertainment room. We're going to watch movies, whatever. So just kind of, you know, trying to create a workflow for the house, I think would be a really helpful idea.
How about, this is jumping topics kind of drastically, but for healthcare workers, those who are on the front lines of this battle right now, they have a different set of things to look out for, probably a different set of fears. Is that part of your job, what you do? And what advice would you give to people who are on the front lines?
No, thank you for asking that. Yes, I am considered, you know, working in crisis services, the front lines healthcare. And so I'm still in the office. My team is still in the office, of course, practicing social distancing as much as possible. With each workplace for healthcare workers, and I would say, you know, we're expanding that frontline now to grocery store workers, delivery workers, those wonderful folks who are still willing to help us function. Each workplace is going to have a set of information to go to in order to, you know, keep yourself healthy. So I would say, refer to your work for some of the specifics. And in general, besides the precautions of, you know, washing your hands all the time, and when we get home, we shower, we don't sit down on anything before we shower and change our clothes, it's really going to be a really important thing for us to also make sure our sanity and our health is very solid, because we're in the thick of it. And so there's a lot of help out there for us, actually. There's the Headspace app, that's a meditation app. And I have heard that they're offering free services, free usage to healthcare and the frontlines folks. So kind of, you know, there's some opportunities out there for us to take advantage of some of these great programs that promote self-care.
You know, this is just on the topic of opportunities. I know we're kind of running low on time, and I'm sorry to take up as much as I'm taking, but is there a kind of overarching mental health opportunity in this crisis, a moment for people to maybe better evaluate their own mental health or better understand it, maybe? Do you know what I mean? Like, I feel like more people are paying attention to, quote unquote, self-care, but they're paying closer attention to how they feel. And I don't know. It's kind of a weird broad question, but is there an opportunity here?
Well, there's always opportunities, and it's, you know, you're talking about a mindset of thriving, which is, I would love to promote that as much as we can here, of being able to take a situation like this that can be really scary and just say, wow, what can I learn from this? How can I become healthy? How can I become mentally well during this time, and what principles can I use now to help myself in the future and for whatever else comes my way? I'm, you know, a firm believer in learning from the past and history, and, you know, people have been through a lot. And one of the things that we've learned is that with really dark times come so much creativity, ingenuity, that is, you know, sourced out by people, you know, everyday people that have been forced to be creative, in coping with those events. So I think we can definitely take a look at what we're going through and ask ourselves that question and ask our loved ones, like, how do we thrive and not just survive through this?
Yeah, adversity making us stronger, kind of the concept there. Before we wrap up, is there anything, Dania Marie, that you want to add here? Just big, obvious things that we're maybe leaving out about this moment in time in terms of the pandemic, also, you know, scary times with earthquakes, et cetera. Yeah, any huge gaping hole?
You know, I would just reiterate the need to connect with folks, social connection, not social disconnection. And I would just encourage us all to have the mindset of we're all in this together. I love a quote, I think it's by Winston Churchill, that says the only way out is through. And it's going to be hard, and it's already been hard. And, you know, we can't predict what's going to happen in the future, which is scary for a lot of us. And we have each other, and support is I really think what's going to get us through this.
Dania Marie Allerton is SAFE UT supervisor with University Neuropsychiatric Institute. I really appreciate you making the time for doing this today, and best of luck in the job that you're doing up there, and stay safe.
Thank you, Roger. Happy to be here.
Dania Marie Allerton says, by the way, that people are always welcome to call or text the Institute's crisis line 24/7. The phone number is 801-587-3000 or 1-800-273-8255. Or they can download the SAFE UT app for free. All of their programs are staffed by master's level or higher clinical mental health counselors. The coronavirus has changed the entire global landscape, how we work, how we socialize, and how we go to school. Parents are now at home with their children who are attending classes through digital learning. Schools initially barred their doors for 2 weeks, but now schools will be closed until the 1st of May. Parents may find it difficult to talk to their children about the coronavirus and some of the anxiety surrounding it. So I sat down with a woman who helped assemble some resources parents can utilize to help explain to their children the world with COVID-19.
So my name is Sandra Buendia. I am the Executive Director of Educational Equity and Student Support and have multiple departments under that umbrella, including Student Services, Social and Emotional Learning, Educational Equity and Access, and Special Education.
Right, and that's for the Salt Lake City School District.
Mm-hmm.
Right. This conversation specifically is about how to talk about such a grand topic to children. And can you tell me sort of what were your thought processes leading into how to equip parents to have this conversation?
Mm-hmm. Well, everything, as you said, has been happening so quickly that we really didn't have an opportunity to involve our counselors and being able to engage students in these kinds of conversations before we had the school dismissal. So as a result, our commitment was to be able to support families in providing them with some resources, including the ability to reach out to their school teacher, principal, and counselor for support in having a conversation about something that's pretty scary, you know, for both the adults and students. So when we started to look at what our options were, we tried to find a variety of resources online that parents would be able to quickly study and not get too overwhelmed by the information, and help guide them to engage in the conversations with students as needed. So, and then we tried to find as many resources as possible in more than the English language, but it was really limited.
Mm. Why do you think it was so limited? Just because of how quickly things are moving? And like how much like no one really knows. We learn more about COVID-19 pretty much every day, right? How do you talk to a child about that who probably has so many questions about something you don't even really know much about yourself?
First and foremost, the kinds of information that we were receiving from adults was that, you know, students were fearful because of the unknown. And so the goal really was to try to reduce their fear and anxiety, and before trying to go into detail about what the virus actually is and what's happening, and then giving parents and guardians the autonomy to be able to themselves decide how much their child can internalize and, you know, process in terms of level of, you know, the whole age appropriateness, right? So you don't want to tell a five-year-old that the virus, you know, can be deadly, or perhaps maybe as a family member you do. But we wanted to definitely respect parents' rights and guardians' rights to make those choices. So that was the goal, is to really reduce stress, reduce anxiety, and make it a little easier for families to have the resources to be able to choose what they want to share and what they want to withhold, just to help students understand why they're staying home.
Did that in any way formulate how you collected the information, or did you just collect as much as you can to just like hear parents do with this as you will?
So as I was looking for these resources, because I spent a lot of time looking, I was reading through them and trying to make a call for, you know, the kind of information parents might have available to make that call. None of us can make that call. All we can do is say, here are these resources. You read through them as the adult in your child's life, and then you determine the level of appropriateness, because we can't really prescribe that. If we were at school, you know, we would be taking into consideration the maturity, you know, and the age of the student, and being able to explain it accordingly. And even then, it's, you know, on a case-by-case basis in terms of every classroom. So in this regard, we really want to respect parents and guardians' rights to make that determination involving, you know, or deciding, pardon me, how much their child can really process and understand, and, you know, what's going to help them really calm their fears, calm their anxiety. And it also offers parents an opportunity to kind of reflect on their own fears and anxiety over this and how to interact. And so I think one of the, you know, one of the recommendations was, don't stay glued to the media all the time, kind of having all of this, you know, fear that's coming across the media, heighten your sense of anxiety. So there were just some common sense things that were available, but also, you know, again, ultimately, we want to respect parents' autonomy to make the decision about how much they feel their children can cope with related to this.
I kind of touched on this a little bit earlier, but I, if you don't mind, we can circle back. How do you tell someone, like, reveal more of the unknowns, you know, clarify things when so much is still uncertain, right? Like, even still, schools were closed for 2 weeks. Now they're closed through May 1st, and things keep on changing and changing. Like, how does a parent navigate this sort of really volatile field almost?
You're asking a really tough question, you know, because it's, in some ways, it's having me think through, should we be prescriptive? We don't want to be so prescriptive that we are infringing upon parents' ability to decide what's appropriate and what's not appropriate for their students. And so some things, right, that are, you know, remind teens that everyone is working hard to manage the virus, right? So the focus is, the virus is out there, but everyone globally is working to manage it. What does that look like? You know, although it may seem difficult, it is important to model calmness. So again, it's, we're going to get through this. We're a family, you know, and so, you know, being able to have those kinds of recommendations, teens will look to parents to gauge how worried they should be, even though it may seem like they tune you out. Show your teens that it's possible to continue to do what is important to you while practicing healthy behaviors in relation to the hand washing, the social distancing, the 6 feet away. And so it's really being able to have parents take the information that we're providing them and interpreting it for their family in terms of, what does that mean? So what does it mean? What does calm look like in, you know, my family versus another family, you know, who might be Somali and resettled, you know, in the U.S. It might look different for them, you know. Social distancing, for me might look different than, you know, someone who has a large family. You know, it's a family of 10. Social distancing is going to look different than for a family of 4. And so really having them take, we're relying on families to read the information, and we're not only relying on them to read this information, but they certainly have each of our elementary schools, actually all of our schools have counselors available, and we have social workers available, and they're, you know, they can reach out if they have any questions related to, you know, I don't understand the resources that you're sending me. Give me something more concrete. These are the fears that my child is feeling. They can certainly reach out to their school counselor or the, or one of the 6 social workers that we have available in our district. So those are resources that are equally available. The Salt Lake Education Foundation just set up a hotline so that families, you know, who maybe are feeling like they need to talk to someone, you know, and they have a specific need or question, can, you know, call the hotline and be referred to an individual who might better respond to their needs. So we're not only relying on providing these links and resources online, we're making sure that we're communicating with our counselors and our social workers to make sure they're staying in communication with families, especially if, you know, they're already working with students. So we're hoping that either way we can personalize it to the needs of, you know, our families and helping them interpret and being able to just, you know, make it through and relieve some of their stress and, you know, and we keep trying to figure out ways to provide them with resources that help them cope through this crisis.
How do you collect the resources and make the information pertinent enough while not being prescriptive, but still being useful enough that they don't need to necessarily seek these counselors? Because I'm sure, you know, you can't all have them talking to every single family at once.
Right. No, you're right. And, you know, the other resource that our student services department, who oversees the counselors, has provided are social and emotional learning lessons. And those are really focused on, you know, just managing emotions, remaining calm, mindfulness. So, those are being made available through the teachers who are creating the coursework online as well, so that it can be incorporated. And I believe that they're also available, I'm trying to remember in what other venue they're available, but it's intended to have something that's, you know, a little more specific in terms of discrete skills that a student might need to be able to think through identifying what their emotions are at the moment. You know, how do I regulate my emotions? You know, and so those are available as well.
Are there any resources available, or do you have any recommendations for how to help parents help their kids cope with loneliness?
I know that from the standpoint of student to teacher and counselor to student, student to administrator, we're working on and have asked our personnel to be able to do more and more with, you know, the different kinds of video chat formats that we have. And for example, Microsoft Teams allows the ability to have multiple students talking to each other, you know, in a setting so they can see, you know, and they've all been like the majority of our students have been provided a device where, you know, that would be something that's available. So I think when as they're receiving as parents, and guardians are receiving more information about what the next 4 to 5 weeks may look like, hopefully they'll see more opportunities that teachers are setting up and counselors are setting up so that they can engage in, you know, video chats in an educational setting. So, but we are, I will say, you know, also cautioning families to be mindful of, you know, the kind of social presence, social media presence that they have, because it's also an opportunity for potential cyberbullying to occur if students aren't monitored. But I would say that's one avenue that families can certainly look to see. And it's hard. I think, you know, so as you and I talked about earlier, you know, there's WhatsApp, right? There are different applications via phone where they can interact with. I just used mine. My daughters and I hadn't visited with my mom in over a year, and I was able to see my mom this past weekend, and we all got on WhatsApp. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was awesome. And it was, and my daughter, I have one daughter living in Seattle who's very much isolated right now. They've been at this longer than Utah has. And so it was nice for her to, that those kinds of interactions, if they're available. And again, we have a lot of families who have smartphones, right? And our students have, who didn't previously have internet service, you know, have been provided, our district provided hotspots. And so hopefully families can look to those resources and FaceTime and, you know, try to have some interactions that way so that they minimize that social, you know, isolation, because it's tough walking around, you know, getting outside still. I mean, you know, we're as long as we're able to, right, until we hear otherwise, you know, to be able to just peek outside, see your neighbor and say hello, or any opportunity they have to be able to have some facial contact, I think is definitely recommended. Mm-hmm. And then we're still working on sending more kinds of resources just to kind of get students, you know, like I was looking for some YouTube, for example, you know, just Zumba, you know, kind of cute things that they can play with. And it's tough. It's a challenge. This is new for all of us. And we're, you know, working on capitalizing on the resources we have, but we're certainly not stopping there, and each and every day all of us are working to find additional resources to support families through this.
Do you think there's anything else you would want to add to this conversation? Anything you think that I missed that you really want to hammer home, or anything else that is valuable that people should know?
I guess probably based on, you know, as I reflect on the questions that you've asked, is reassuring parents that they should feel confident in contacting, you know, their schools for support, for questions, for more guidance, you know, and certainly, you know, you know, that would be the only, and we say their schools because each of them have personnel who they have probably developed a relationship with, right? To have them, you know, contact me who they've never met, is, you know, they're going to feel more comfortable contacting someone that they know. So just the reassurance that we're here to support them in any way that we can within, you know, our ability. And we just, at this point, we just need to support each other in just making it through.
Dr. Buendia mentioned a hotline parents can utilize if they feel like they need specialized help. That number is 801-301-6476.
The disruption to daily life due to COVID-19 has been felt all across the board, but perhaps none more so than for college students. Across the country and state, classes have been suspended or moved online, dormitories have been emptied and students sent home, and graduations have been postponed or outright canceled for the foreseeable future. Lauren Weitzman, director of the University of Utah Counseling Center, has seen this play out over the last week, and as students' lives are uprooted, the center has continued to offer support and resources. Producer Anthony Scoma spoke with her about how the University of Utah is adapting to the changing circumstances, as well as advice to stay centered and sane in the midst of upheaval.
So I just wanted to start off the conversation by asking you, what are the changes you're seeing on campus? Obviously, students were on spring break, classes were canceled for the 16th and 17th of March, and then on the 18th, it moved to full online classes. But is that everything? Is everything canceled on campus?
That's a good question. So everything is not canceled on campus, but things have been changing quickly, especially since last week. Mm-hmm. So the original intention was to keep campus operational while students were on online classes. And I think as the COVID kind of situation has worsened, offices are moving to virtual services pretty much for the most part. You may be aware that I believe just on Friday, or maybe it was yesterday, the decision was made to close the Marriott Library. The library had been open, but then they started kind of just using one entrance. And then I think now they've completely closed the building. So I think as physical distancing gets more real, things are changing. So for example, in the counseling center, just for those first couple of days when classes were canceled, we had staff in the office and we were providing services for if a student might walk into the office for crisis support. We didn't have students do that, but we were there. But then given just health and safety concerns, we've now moved to fully remote operations. I also received some guidelines from the university. I think they're just trying to start to close down buildings and kind of keep them closed. Mm-hmm. I'm not the expert on this, but I think part of it is kind of a facilities piece around managing custodial services. And then the other big piece that's happening relates to students living in housing. I don't know if you've spoken with anyone there, and they could probably give you a more direct, story on this. But the original message to students who were living in housing is if you went home for spring break, we encourage you to stay home. I think they had more students who were wanting to stay in the residence halls than they anticipated. Mm-hmm. And again, because of the realities of COVID and the need for physical distancing, they have shifted just as of yesterday to having students leave the residence halls, but there is the option for a limited number of students to stay, and there's a new application process. And they're really prioritizing students with hardships, such as not having a place to live, homeless students, students who have kind of difficult situations in their homes. So I think slowly but surely, there's fewer and fewer people on campus. And I don't think campus is like officially closed.
Okay.
So it's a weird space.
Gotcha. Obviously, that's having major disruptions to student life on campus and off campus. So what are the kinds of mental health fallout you're seeing with students who are coming to the counseling center for resources or for help? Mm-hmm. Obviously, this is a telecommunication you are instituting at this point.
Right. So I can just summarize kind of what our current operations are. So we are providing crisis support via good old-fashioned telephone. Mm-hmm. So students would need to call the counseling center 581-6826, and they would be directed to speak to one of our crisis counselors. Again, that's crisis support. We are conducting what we're calling phone triage sessions that are 30-minute appointments with staff for students who are wanting to access counseling center services. We are talking with students, assessing kind of what's going on, and given kind of a couple of different pieces. One, just the time of the semester. We're in the last half of spring, and many students won't be enrolled in the summer. We're trying to maximize the use of those appointments to help kind of talk students through whatever particular concern that they're using, that they're dealing with. So we're not doing kind of the initial intake appointments in the same way that we have kind of post this crisis right now. We're just wanting to touch in with students who are making contact with us, get a feel for what's going on, provide support. The other thing we've done for current clients of the Counseling Center is we've transitioned to providing telemental health therapy sessions, and that's a huge undertaking that with the help of some amazing staff, we were able to pull off in a very short period of time. And so it's basically a HIPAA encrypted Zoom platform that allows us to have a therapy session with clients. There's, without getting into the weeds on this, there are some differences in how we think about telemental health counseling versus kind of in-person counseling, which is one of the reasons we're limiting that right now to in-person. To current clients. Kind of our thinking is let's help the students that we're working with. Let's try to get people stabilized. And we are seeing with more students online and not on campus, there's less volume coming into the counseling center, but I'm still kind of learning the implications of that. We just rolled out the telemental health this week. So that would be yesterday. I'm really excited about a new offering that staff have put together that people can find on our website. And it's a workshop. It's called Coping with Chaos. And it's essentially being structured as an opportunity for anyone. This would be students, faculty, or staff affiliated with the University of Utah to Zoom in with one of our staff members. There's designated times. We're starting with half hour this week, but I think it'll be moving to an hour next week as schedules settle out. And it's called Coping with Chaos because it's really an online forum to provide some skill and support as we're all dealing with this huge magnitude of change. So that's a summary of what we've currently got going. That's all up on our website, but maybe to expand out in terms of what we're seeing, I mean, clearly, I think we're all experiencing just huge amounts of uncertainty, a lot of anxiety, a lot of questions about what's happening moving forward. Certainly, we're worried about our physical health and safety. We're worried about our loved ones. We're worried about the situation that we keep hearing about on the news with what happens if we're not successful in flattening the curve in terms of medical resources and impact on hospitals. So I think each of us is dealing with this, and it's tough. And so providing support, providing strategies for students and to help kind of manage this, that's again, at the core of what we're wanting to do with that Coping with Chaos workshop. And we also have some other resources online, which are apps that students can use for support in times like this. I'll just pause now because I've just talked for a long time.
So obviously, yeah, the impact on students' daily lives is significant. And according to a survey that the Utah System of Higher Education released last year, I'm sure you're aware of it, students, 45.6% felt debilitating depression in the last 12 months, and 63% felt overwhelming anxiety in the last 12 months. And that's across all Utah universities. I can only imagine that is been increased in the last month due to all the news coming out. What do you think it does to students who are already going through a crisis? And how can they find footing while trying to deal with what they might already be dealing with, and on top of a global pandemic?
Yes, clearly this is tapping us in ways I don't think any of us have imagined. And as you were, describing, for students who are already experiencing significant depression and anxiety, if you think about the resources that, students are using to cope with that, and then you throw a global pandemic on top of that, clearly coping resources are depleted. And if we have more depleted coping resources to begin with, that makes it even more difficult to kind of dig deep. You know, that said, I do believe that resiliency is something that is real and that many people are connecting with and able to, manifest during these times. Certainly some of us are going to be more vulnerable than others. I was in a phone call yesterday and learned that there's several students reaching out to our Center for Student Wellness, asking about how they can help others as one way to do something. I think that's really important to remember. So, when I think about this and when I give advice to students, there's several things that come to mind. One is just recognizing that, yes, this is kind of outside of our everyday experience. And we know whenever we're faced with abnormal events, there's lots of normal reactions that we have to those. So first, I think it's important, as we say, to just normalize that this is going to impact people. It's going to impact how we feel emotionally. It's very likely that we'll be kind of all over the map, may feel like a roller coaster of emotions, and you may feel just a lot of shock and numbness and not anything at all. It certainly affects our ability to concentrate and make decisions. So I think it's got to be really challenging for many students to make this transition to an online learning environment. I appreciate what I've heard from faculty and our administration to kind of recognize that this is not an easy transition and for faculty to take that in consideration in terms of grading. And now there's the option for credit, no credit, which I think takes some of the pressure off, but concentration will be impacted. It's going to be harder to study. We're all having to create like new routines that we're doing from our homes, just creating new structures. And certainly physically, it's really common to have a variety of physical symptoms, just feeling our stress points, maybe feeling, kind of that sick to my stomach feeling that sometimes can go along with anxiety. Certainly we're all kind of hyper-focused on our health and any symptoms that we have right now, which I think is scary. So that's one thing I'd like to say is just it's important to recognize that this is impacting us and just to be, recognizing that the reactions we're having are normal. And this, again, is outside the scope of, I think, what anyone has experienced in terms of change in a very short time. And then the other thing that I like to recommend really relates to a practice of mindfulness. It's very easy when we're anxious to start to spin out into the future and worry about, perceived threats, things that may or may not happen. And again, those anxieties and fears are very understandable, but anxiety can build on anxiety. And sometimes what can be helpful is just to kind of bring ourselves back into the present moment. And what I mean by that is just to take a minute, check in with yourself, maybe even do like a body scan or a motion scan. What am I feeling right now? What am I worried about? Kind of acknowledge those emotions. Again, normalize that it's understandable that we're feeling them. But then it can be helpful to think about things like, okay, knowing all this, what do I have control over? Is there one thing that I can do today to, work on this concern or fear that I have? So maybe it's like, oh my gosh, I don't know how I'm going to pass this class. Well, maybe I can just really try to set aside a couple of hours to work on one homework assignment or do the readings for that class. So it's each time, and it's a practice that we can bring ourselves back into the present moment. I think it just helps us get away from that kind of future-focused anxiety. You've probably heard people talk about practicing gratitude. Mm-hmm. I think that's something that can be really helpful too. And even in these like incredibly difficult times, maybe taking a moment and say, and allowing ourselves to think about, okay, what are one or two or three things that I'm really grateful for? Well, I'm getting to spend the day home with my dog or my cat. I have different time with my partner or family members. You know, I'm getting to catch up on some of those Netflix shows that I really wanted to watch. But if we can, you know, maintain an awareness of things that we're grateful for, I think that also helps put things in perspective.
So from a counselor standpoint, how does your recommendations, your treatment, your counseling differ in this pandemic to what would before be a personal tragedy or stressor? Do you approach it differently, especially in the case of these students being isolated in large part?
Mm-hmm. You know, that's a good question. And really, I don't think we approach it differently. I think it's just recognizing the different scope. So everything that I just shared is, you know, something I've shared with people who are dealing with other kinds of traumatic events. I think it's just there's this kind of addition of incomprehensibility and how did the world change so much, and you know, the fears and the fact that this is affecting everybody essentially. It's not an like a hurricane or, you know, a campus or a, you know, a mass shooting. Those are horrible things. They happen in more discrete locations. It feels like there's a more predictable way in which that people kind of recover from those things. So we're just up against something we've never been before, up against before. So I think the uncertainty is huge, but I would say it's still the same ideas and the same practice that are going to get us through this. And I think we're all being asked to draw on coping resources that we have developed over the years. Clearly, some of us have more robust coping strategies. Others of us are more vulnerable and our coping strategies are depleted. But it's just kind of, again, another thing to recommend that I didn't say before was the importance of establishing a routine and trying to make what's within our sphere of control predictable. So you've probably heard the suggestion that people wake up at the same time every day, take a shower in the morning, if that's typically when you take a shower, find ways to exercise, build that into your routine, try to have regular eating, you know, meals, try to eat healthy foods, look at your use of alcohol or other substances and kind of, you know, make some good choices around whether that's, you know, helpful or not. So I think the more we can kind of create a routine and, yeah, we're all kind of isolated, and I get in a wild way for me being able to reach out kind of across kind of technology platforms like FaceTime or Zoom or Skype. We can still engage with each other. I found it interesting that our Vice President for Student Affairs, Lori McDonald, in an update to all of the directors who report to her, just asked us to stop using the term social distancing and use the term physical distancing instead. I used that term earlier, and you may have, again, seen some stuff in social media. I think we're realizing that while we're physically apart from each other, that doesn't mean that we're socially distanced. And I think if anything this crisis is teaching us, it's how important our social connections are. And I think being able to maintain those over our technologies is a blessing right now. And I would also encourage people to just be able to, you know, look somebody in the eye so that even if it's over Skype or Zoom or FaceTime, so that we can maintain those social connections.
Students and faculty of the University of Utah can access Counseling Center resources on their website, counselingcenter.utah.edu. If you want to share some of your struggles and triumphs while handling the coronavirus, you can go to kcpw.org/yourstory.